In October of 2021, BPL opened its first new branch in nearly 40 years. Adams Street Library is our 60th library branch, and it's located in Dumbo, right under the Manhattan Bridge.
Which is probably one of the noisiest neighborhoods in Brooklyn, with the B, D, N, and Q trains rattling overhead. The sound of jackhammers as streets are repaired and new high-rises go up, and of course the subtler sound of waves, because Adams Street Library is right on the waterfront, with a breathtaking view of the East River and the Manhattan skyline.
But the really cool thing about Adams Street Library is that when you walk inside the double doors, the cacophony of Dumbo disappears. It's like a sanctuary.
The windows are completely soundproofed, so inside the building, it's quiet.
This is Kat Savage, the supervising librarian at Adams Street.
It's really a unique neighborhood and a unique place to be, and looking out on the water and serving this neighborhood that's, you know, changing a lot and has never had a library before.
What's special about this library space, aside from the fact that it's our first new branch in decades, is that it is not a standalone library building, like all of our other branches. Adams Street occupies the first floor of what was once a factory.
It had many lives over the years. I think at one point it was a envelope factory, I remember hearing about.
Before it was a paper company, the factory building, which takes up half a city block, manufactured all kinds of tin cans, from paint cans to vegetable cans to lard pails, according to an advertisement archived in our Center for Brooklyn History. Today, the top floors are mostly residential, and the bottom floor is, of course, a library.
It's kind of funny because we do have upstairs neighbors, so sometimes we hear, I think, their dog, sometimes we hear them vacuum. It typically is, you know, after the work day is typically over. It's kind of amazing. It's like, this is a New York library, you have upstairs neighbors.
Adams Street might be our first library with upstairs neighbors, but it won't be our last. Two of our libraries currently under renovation, Sunset Park and Brooklyn Heights, will reopen with apartment buildings overhead.
Adams Street is unique because it's our first permanent branch in an already existing historic building that has been refurbished for use as a new library. So in honor of our 60th branch, our whole episode will feature new libraries in old buildings. I'm Krista Corbett-Kavoris, and it is good to be back.
I'm Adra Duse, and it's great to have you back, Krista. This is Borrowed, stories that start at the library. Today, we might think of libraries as standalone buildings just for that purpose, but that wasn't always the case.
Right, and that idea likely comes from the Carnegie buildings that went up en masse in the first few decades of the 20th century. We have 18 Carnegies still standing here in Brooklyn, which is nearly a third of our branch libraries. And there are thousands of Carnegie Library buildings still in use across the world. In fact, we have a whole episode about Andrew Carnegie's legacy, which we'll link to in our show notes page. But before and after standalone Carnegie-inspired library buildings, libraries often just popped up anywhere they could, often sharing spaces with other businesses. And there are lots of examples of this in our own history. As early as 1912, Midwood and then Mill Basin libraries opened up as what was called deposit collections within pharmacies, where patrons could just pick up and drop off books. Kings Bay and New Lots libraries originally operated out of neighborhood storefronts. Paddigat Library opened up in the abandoned laundry room of the Glenwood Project in 1950, and Cypress Hills Library opened up on the ground floor of the Cypress Hills houses in 1955.
And it's not just a thing of the past. When some of our branches close for renovations, we often open up in temporary locations. Right now, Sunset Park Library is temporarily located on the first floor of a police department building, and until recently, Brooklyn Heights operated out of half of a church.
One project that we wanted to highlight is a satellite library branch that opened up inside of a hospital. And this one is unique for us because it's an example of staff taking initiative to remain in their neighborhood communities.
So the idea came about when we got the news that East Flatbush would be closing for renovation.
Larissa Larrier is the supervising librarian at East Flatbush Library, and she's the mastermind behind the hospital library program called Library in Transit, which was a BPL incubator project, a program that gives grants to innovative library initiatives. Incubator is supported by the Charles H. Revson Foundation.
We pitched the project, and we already had a partnership with Brookdale Hospital, which is located right around the corner with us.
When one of our branches has to close down for whatever reason, we usually offer a temporary library in a van, which we call a bookmobile. But services at a bookmobile are really limited, and you can browse a small collection of books, check out and return books, and get a library card, but you can't pick up holds or use technology.
And in East Flatbush, many patrons relied on their library to access computers and the internet. So when Larissa and her staff decided on Brookdale Hospital as a temporary location, she made sure to include laptops, iPads, printing services, as well as a place where patrons could just sit down and take a minute out of their day to relax and read.
The majority of our population was actually the hospital staff. And then once word really started to spread, you know, we were able to get the public in those doors, and they were coming just as quick as the hospital staff. And it was so much to the point where they were like, you guys should just stay here. And we were just like, that would be nice, but, you know, we have to open eventually.
Unfortunately, during the pandemic, the library in transit had to close over safety concerns for the staff and patrons. Brookdale was hard hit early on in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Larissa is looking forward to reopening the East Flatbush branch soon.
We're all looking forward to that day for sure. Okay, so I have another example of a temporary library operating out of a pretty unique place.
Oh yeah? What's that?
Well, this library is in Carmel, Indiana, and it's currently housed in a former grocery store.
It is inside an 80,000 square foot grocery store that had not been occupied except by spiders and mice for 3 years.
This is Beth Meyer, assistant director of Carmel Clay Public Library. In the middle of the pandemic, with their branch under renovation, the main library decided to move its entire collection to the former grocery store.
Once we realized it would be so much more work and honestly not advantageous to move all of our stacks, our physical bookshelves, we set about cleaning all of the shelves that had been left behind. And so it's still grocery store shelving, which is much different than library shelving. We actually ripped motors out of the freezers, and so we've been using those as displays and shelves for our materials. We even managed to rearrange some of the letters on the wall that are very grocery store font, and instead of saying meat or bread, it says read. We've tried to be a little clever here and there.
And the surprising thing, even though it's an awkward temporary space, their patrons apparently love it.
There are a shocking number of people who say, so are you just going to stay here? And if you walked in, it's clear we have done nothing beyond just the very minimal, you know, making sure we are shipshape and Bristol fashion as far as like the fire marshal is concerned and getting our materials in good shape. We've not painted. It still looks very grocery store-like from the 90s.
That honestly does sound pretty cool.
It's a sight to see. We have pictures up on our webpage, so listeners can see that too. And another funny thing about Carmel Clay Public Library is that this is not their first branch in a grocery store.
Wait, it's not?
Nope. The Joyce Winter West branch is also a former grocery store, albeit a much smaller one.
So, okay, if you've not hung out in the Midwest very much, we like our grocery stores, and we like a lot of them, and there are loyalties, and if a chain can no longer sustain its model, they leave a lot of open spaces. I think we have a lot of like flat surface parking and a lot of grocery stores.
Beth said the main branch will be vacating the grocery store by the end of the year.
So what's going to happen to the space?
Well, they're not sure, but Beth had at least one plan for the building before they move out.
I personally would like to have a giant paintball war in here before we like have to leave, but I don't think that's going to go over very well, because if you saw the place, there's shelves and hidey holes and all kinds of things. So yeah, I would like to have a paintball game in here.
Okay, Beth, if that happens, we are all coming to Indiana to play paintball in a former library turned grocery store. Okay, Atua, I've got one for you. This library is in Windsor, Ontario, in Canada, And let's see if you can actually guess what kind of building it's in.
Coming up to the front of the library, you can kind of tell that it's like where the windows are placed. It's where there was like a roll-up kind of garage door. So you can kind of tell that there was something there that needed vehicles to go into.
I'm going to guess like a parking garage.
Close. It's actually a former firehouse.
So not close at all.
There was also a customer from the neighborhood who donated some fire safety, fire uniform items as well. So there's a helmet in there. I think there's also a boot, possibly.
That's Rebecca Mayer, a public service librarian at Windsor Public Library. And she worked at that firehouse library, which is actually called the John Muir Library, when it first opened in 2019. The building is really unique because it's actually a combination of two historic buildings, the town fire hall, built in 1921, and horse stables, which date back to the mid-1800s. There's an observation tower where patrons can climb up and look around, and there's also a good amount of open space because, well, there used to be fire trucks inside the building. Rebecca mentioned that they used the big open space to run a popular speed friending event for the large number of students in the neighborhood.
Talk about new uses for old spaces.
Yeah, for sure. And another interesting thing I learned is that the library in many ways saved the building itself.
The city had been looking for a use for that building for a while because it had historical significance. And if the library wasn't really, or the city wasn't willing to take responsibility for this building and make an effort to clean it up and reuse it, then it would kind of lose its significance. It would maybe lose its structure even more.
So I guess it's historic preservation and community service rolled into one.
Right. And that's not unique to Ontario. There's actually a book that came out this past June from the International Federation of Library Associations called New Libraries in Old Buildings. And that's what led us to talk to the folks at the John Muir Library in the first place.
It's a really cool read, and it covers a bunch of different library projects where old buildings were refurbished to be used as libraries. The book takes a sustainability perspective too. One of the authors writes that it is no longer the case that demolishing and rebuilding are less expensive than maintaining and reusing.
There's a huge focus at the moment within the architectural community to try and reduce the amount of a carbon footprint that we have by, say, changing materials, looking at more sustainable materials and so on.
That's Valerie Mulvin, an architect and director of McCullough Mulvin Architects in Dublin, Ireland, a firm that has created many new libraries in old buildings.
But I think the big thing that is the huge elephant in the room is the fact that the building stock we already have and reusing that is the most sustainable thing we could do.
Another part of the IFLA book on new libraries and old buildings is this idea that in many small towns, there's probably an old building right at the center that needs a new use.
Here's Valerie again talking about exactly that idea.
You're thinking of pieces of streetscape and whole town centers which need anchor points, and they need footfall, they need people to be coming into them. And we find that libraries in Ireland, we find, are one of the most popular uses. They bring huge numbers of people in. The footfall in any library that we've ever done has increased by, I don't know, Ruth, you might remember some of the figures, but they're astonishing.
Valerie told us about a recent project they completed in Blackrock, a seaside suburb of Dublin, that saved three historic buildings dating back to 1860. The former town hall, the city technical school, and actually a Carnegie Library building that had fallen into disrepair.
That building was derelict, and the front of the library had begun to crumble, and there was a huge amount of work to do on a plaster facade from 1905, which had all kinds of pilasters and columns and carved detail. It had all begun to fall off. And, you know, between persuading the library council that they should use an existing building, because we were able to offer them the additional space, the whole thing began to work. We find very often we have to persuade people to do this, that people always think, and it's true, it's easier to tear something down and start again if you're just thinking, like, let's think of it as a project management thing or as an engineering, a purely engineering thing. But we do find that with a little bit of work, a little bit of love and a little bit of thought, you can do something which really makes a contribution to the history, to the heritage, to the sense of continuity in a small township.
That does sound familiar, because Brooklyn Public Library is constantly updating our stock of old buildings. A handful of our libraries are closed for renovation at any given time to make sure that those buildings can be as functional, as modern as they can be. But it is also important to us to try and preserve these beautiful pieces of history and community.
Ruth O'Herlihy told us about another project that McCullough Mulvan Architects worked on, Rush Library, in another Irish seaside town that needed a new library. The town decided to repurpose an unused Catholic church, which gave the project a unique challenge. Namely, how do you take a building that was once a religious place with specific doctrines and rituals and turn it into a place of free thought and learning?
That kind of mind shift was important. You know, that was also part of the way we were thinking about the design. Something had to change radically in order for it to be kind of accepted by the community as the new kind of community focus, which was a library.
And here's Valerie again.
I suppose the challenge of a church is that it's a high volume space. It's terribly axial. It's like vroom. It's about all of your focus is about heading for the altar. And the altar in this particular situation had quite a beautiful set of old Victorian tiles and painted decoration on the walls.
So instead of all the focus being on the altar and these religious stained glass windows, the architects created a winding path with different wooden elements leading up to the front of the building. And the confessionals?
We were delighted to be able to make a music listening place in the confessional. So you can sit there now and listen to music. And I love that.
Wow, now I really want to take a trip to Ireland and visit all these libraries.
I know. I mean, the pictures are really gorgeous, but it doesn't do it justice. I think we have to take Bard on the road.
Yeah, absolutely. After the last couple of years, I will take any opportunity to travel internationally. For now, though, let's just get back to our own very exciting new library in an old building, Adam Street in Dumbo and Vinegar Hill, and one of the most important aspects of any library, the people who use it.
Dumbo's changed a lot over the years, as well as I understand it, going from sort of a neighborhood that didn't really have a lot to a neighborhood where we're seeing a lot of new construction, a lot of new businesses coming in, and we're serving a population that makes $200,000 a year and a population that makes $12,000 a year. And it's everyone is equally welcome to come in and use the space. There's an organization called the Doe Fund that does a lot of work for the Dumbo Improvement District. And they're like super awesome workers, but they work outside all day long. So we see them sometimes come in here just to warm up, read things, and, you know, take a moment out of their day. A gentleman just walked in of that.
Just as Kat was talking, a Doe Fund worker in a blue jumpsuit came in and sat down at a table facing this absolutely stunning view of Manhattan. And what's so cool about the space is that it's so bright and modern and actually feels like you're in a bookstore or even, dare I say it, an Apple store.
Oh, nice. Wow. Okay, this feels very modern. It's very bright and white.
Kat led our producer, Virginia, to the glass-walled meeting room and flicked on the lights.
Yeah, this is sometimes called the Space Odyssey Room. We do get a lot of remarks on, oh, this doesn't feel like a library. This feels really modern, really new.
Then Kat took Virginia to the children's area, which at Adam Street is right in the center of the library.
Oh, wow. Yeah, usually kids' areas are off to the side or upstairs.
That's true. But this was a very conscious decision by the architects and the community members who gave feedback on the designs for Adam Street to make the kids the center of the library.
We're all, no matter how old we are, we all have been children. We all have been babies. We've all learned how to read. And this is a place where, you know, things begin. There's something that happens when I'm in this room where the colors, I think, start something in my brain. I actually get so much work done in this room when I'm on the reference desk.
The children's room is bright orange and really fun and warm. And even though the library opened during the pandemic, Kat said that Adam Street already has its regulars.
And we're seeing a lot of the kids come over after school and finding this space to be a place where they can put down their backpack, work on some homework, socialize with one another until it's time to, you know, do the next thing in their day. The teen space with that curtain that moves across, I've taught the teens that they can move the curtain open and shut as they see fit, and they have embraced that with great gusto.
Okay, so I guess if we can't get to Dublin, maybe we just go to Dumbo?
Yes, that sounds much easier. And Adam Street wants to see you. Kat said in the first couple of weeks that the branch was open, they were issuing 240 new library cards every week.
You know, I don't think this happens a lot, opening a new library. I am so excited by the opportunity to really say, hey, we're going to do things, you know, in the way that makes sense for this library, for this neighborhood, and we want to provide, you know, the best, most welcoming place that we can for folks in our communities and the world.
Welcome to the BPL Constellation, Adam Street.
And to round out this episode, we are bringing you books about Dumbo and Vinegar Hill from Sasha Jones, another Adams Street librarian.
So this is a very kind of wide-ranging, diverse list of books about different aspects of Dumbo. I think that Dumbo, like most neighborhoods, is one of those places that's best explored on foot. It very much feels like a neighborhood that's still in flux. You know, there's a lot of construction going on. And there's also just a lot of visitors to the neighborhood because it is so well known as a photography destination for tourists. And so it has this sort of like in motion feeling to it sometimes. And then, of course, there's also a lot of layers to Dumbo because the way it looks now is very different than how it looks in the past. So Birding at the Bridge, In Search of Every Bird on the Brooklyn Waterfront is a book by Heather Wolf. And it's really a definitive field guide to the bird population of Brooklyn Bridge Park, which, depending on how you are looking at it, is Dumbo's front or backyard. It's written by a Dumbo resident who is an application programmer at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And what I love about this book is that it's so compact. It's sort of a small square book that will fit in your pocket or a small bag. So it's a great companion for walking around the park and getting to know the environment. And the book itself is filled with stunning nature photography of all of these different birds that you can find in the park, as well as tips for exploring and finding them on your own. And it's also kind of laced through with Heather's personal narrative that I think has a great power to kind of spark your own sense of connection to Dumbo's natural environment. The next book on my list is The Black Churches of Brooklyn by Clarence Taylor. This is a thorough and invaluable resource for readers interested in learning about Dumbo's Black history. And Dumbo was home to a free Black community in the 19th century and was actually the first location of several prominent Black churches that then went on to move to Bedford-Stuyvesant and other neighborhoods. This book is written by a professor emeritus of history at Baruch College, a native Brooklynite, Clarence Taylor. And while there are, you know, resources to be found online, there are not as many widely accessible print books on Dumbo's Black history as there should be. So this one is a really great start from our circulating collection for readers and researchers interested in understanding Black roots in Dumbo and the roles they've played in the borough's history, present, and future. The next book that I'll talk about is When Brooklyn Was Queer by Hugh Ryan. That's a groundbreaking exploration of Brooklyn's LGBTQ history from the 19th century onwards. And it's one of those works of public history that's really vibrant and readable and brings the past to life. And one quote that I really like from Hugh Ryan is that queer life in Brooklyn began by the water and spread outward. So it's, you know, goes from Coney Island all the way up to Greenpoint. And Dumbo's sort of, you know, right in the middle of all that. So, you know, with Coney Island, you have, you know, the circus and that whole culture. Over by Dumbo, you also have the Navy Yards and all the factory buildings like the one that our library is in. And then, of course, you have all of the different buildings and businesses and services that served the people who lived and worked in those environments. So it's really, there's just sort of an endless amount of stories you can tell about that history.
BARD is brought to you by Brooklyn Public Library and is hosted by me and Krista Corbett-Cavores. You can find a transcript as well as the full book list for this episode on our website, bklynlibrary.org/podcast.
This episode was produced and written by Virginia Marshall, with help from Fritzi Bodenheimer, Jennifer Prophet, and Robin Lester-Kenton. Our music composer is Billy Libby, and Meryl Friedman designed our logo.
Bard will be back next month. Until then, visit our very newest library branch at 9 Adams Street in Dumbo.
It's kind of funny because we do have upstairs neighbors. So sometimes we hear, I think, their dog. Sometimes we hear them vacuum. It's kind of amazing. It's like, this is a New York library. You have upstairs neighbors.
Adams Street might be our first library with upstairs neighbors, but it won't be our last. Two of our libraries currently under renovation, Sunset Park and Brooklyn Heights, will reopen with apartment buildings overhead.
So in honor of our 60th branch, our whole episode will feature new libraries in old buildings.